I would like to know the people from Inuvik who are in the Canadian Army.
Right now?
Yeah, you say you know about six of them?
Well, no, that was when Albert, Abraham Albert, then joined up.
There were six who joined up.
Yeah.
That was during the war.
No, after the war.
After the war.
Right after the war. You see, at that time I was a chief in the Klavik.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no employment in the Klavik. And the boys come to me and say, what can we do? We got no job. And they have what they call registered trapline.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of boys down there that they couldn't go into no registered trapline. They couldn't make no money in no ways. And they come to me and they says, see, we've got to get something. Then I found out that the boys would start stealing and breaking in, trying to get something. So I went up to the administration. I said, look, I said, we can't continue this way. I said, you people registered these areas. And I said, them boys had no way to make money. And there's no employment in the Klavik. What are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they said, Chief, he said, we'll do our best. Well, I said, at least get them out of here. Let them join the Air Force or Army or whatever they can do. Help them boys that way. So they wrote a letter to the Army headquarters and they said, fine, dandy, so we'll take them. And that's where six of them joined up. Five came back and one stayed. And today that boy is Staff Sergeant in the Army Forces right now, and he's having to be a half Eskimo.
So some of the six who joined up, there were Indians and there were Eskimo.
That's right. I think there was three of each, and but the rest all came back. And that's it. But this boy stuck with the Army, and today he's got a position out there. So I met him about 5 years. After that in Whitehorse, I was out on this, what they call Canadian Rangers course. And I had to go to Whitehorse, and that's where I took my course for about a month. And that's where I met this boy. At that time, he was a corporal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any others now in Inuvik who have been there, who have been in the Army? Abraham has been.
Yeah, he's been. And Victor Stewart.
Victor Allen?
Victor Stewart.
Victor Stewart.
Uh-huh. He's in the Klavik. And another boy from Fort McPherson, three, and then there was three Eskimo boys. But I wouldn't recall their names right now, but this Eskimo half-breed boy, he's a Dylan. You know, you've seen these Dylan boys, their brother.
Mm-hmm.
He's still with us, with the Army.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a while now. And he didn't have too much education, but I mean the Army trained him, and now he's the Staff Sergeant in the Army.
Now before that, say during the first, during the Second War, during the war itself,
yeah,
were there any Indians or Eskimo from the Delta who went into the military service?
No, nothing at all. The only people that I've been going out from here and back outside again. The only people, native people that joined up with the Army during the war was a lot of people from Upper South, Alberta and Saskatchewan and all that.
You mean Métis and Indians?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same with the First World War?
Well, yes. Not too many at that time, but I had about three or four of them. And my first cousin, Stark joined the Army. They were recruiting in Dawson, and he was in Dawson at that time. And the Army was recruiting for Amherst, and that's where my cousin joined up. But after he got a little training in Dawson City, they were going to take their training in England, like.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going over, and they got wrecked on the way.
Oh.
And that's how he died. They lost it. Lost everybody.
Whose son would that have been?
Old Campbell.
Old Campbell?
Old Man Campbell, that's his name.
How was he related to you? Must have been a
Well,
distant,
oh,
right?
that's a
Distant, eh?
quite a bit distant.
Do you know how?
Well, Old Man Campbell was not related to me, but my mother's and Colin Campbell's mother were sisters.
Elizabeth Vitrakwa.
No, not
and
Elizabeth. My first mother, I told you
oh,
before.
Oh, Mary.
Yeah.
Mary Malcolm.
Mary
sorry.
Malcolm, yeah.
Yeah, I got right. And this woman who married Campbell was sisters.
Just a minute now. Old Man Campbell, that's the old man himself.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. That's the real old man.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who he was married to, but he had two sons. One was Colin, and the other one was Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The whole outfit was gone. So, see, this is, that's the olden days, how people worked like, you know. So these two boys was gone, then Old Man Campbell had another boy
mm-hmm.
who married my mother's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So, they just call them the same boys again, they call them Andrew and Colin.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they come to be my first cousins.
Another Colin and another Campbell.
That's
another
right.
Colin and another Andrew.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
By Mary's sister.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And Andrew joined
the army.
Lost his life
yeah.
In a shipwreck.
Uh-huh. And Colin, he's my first cousin, and he after he left school, he was a chief in Fort Norman
mm-hmm.
for quite a number of years. And he's a Lucio, and they're slaves, but they appointed him as a chief.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah. And he married a slavey woman from Fort Norman. Then she died. They didn't have any children there, so she died. And then he came down here and spent a year with us in the Klavik. And the following year, he went back to Fort Norman and got married, remarried again. And that's the winter he died.
He's dead too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Married a Fort Norman woman.
Yes,
that's
second
right.
time. Second time. Mm-hmm. Oh, just before you asked me a question now, I told you that Andrew lost his life trying to get over to England.
Yes.
Now, I got, as I told you before, that I got uncles in Alaska.
Yes.
And his first son joined the U.S. Army, the U.S. Air Force. And his name was Edward, this boy. And he got shot down over Japan the day before the atomic bomb was dropped there. So I had two cousins in the armed forces. And that's the only people from down here ever joined the armed forces when there was a war off.
Mm-hmm.
With my two cousins, Andrew, and I think the other one's name was Edward.
Mm-hmm. From Alaska.
Mm-hmm. But he joined he was trained in the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah.
And that's the year they were going, that's the time he got shot down just the day before they dropped his atomic bomb.
The fellows here, they don't go into the Army very often.
Not very often, no. They're just starting now, you see. Before it's something new to them. But now, you see, they're getting to realize, well, they figure, most of them figure, well, we should join the Army or Navy. think they're getting on slowly from down here anyway.
Do you think it suits them?
Well, I think it's, I think it should be good training for them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it suits them, right? Whether they like it or not, I wouldn't know. But some of them do like it. But I mean, they have to get a certain amount of education to start with.
Yeah.
But you see, they're working on that now. Like a Simler's boy. You know Mr. Simler?
Yes, sure.
Their boy?
Yes.
Melvin?
Yes, Melvin.
Well, he wanted to get out of here, so he joined the RCF. He's still there. He came back here about, I think last summer for a holiday. Then he went right back again. I met him on the trail and I said, how do you like it? How do you like it? And he says, very good, Jim. They're sure learning a lot anyway. And he had, I don't think he had even grade 9. But still, I mean, they're trying to help him and he likes it. So
yeah.
I think quite a few of the boys are joining up now. But eventually, I think it'll be quite a lot of them join up.
The reason why I ask whether it suits them, here in the bush, they're so free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their time is their own. They get up with the sun. And in the army, things are so
different.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. different.
Well, up until now, I think the kiddies right now, they realize that they're, let's forget the old business. I mean, they're going into a new change of life, education, white man way. And I think it's most of them is taking it that way now. Because you can never get them back to the old system. I mean, their times are getting so fast ahead that, well, they're trying to keep, I mean, they've got to be trained to keep up with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as it suits the kids, oh, sure. The idea is that they've got to keep up with times right now. So when I go in the area and I talk to my people, and I tell them how the white man is doing, what they're trying to train our children and everything like that, I know your people, I said, you're kicking like the dickens because you want them still in the old ways. But I said, that's done away with it. I said, forget about it. I said, just wait and get them education. We're lost already, so we might as well keep up with the white people.
You think some of the people here are very strongly attached to the old ways?
Not too many around here, but my personal character.
You're
that's
thinking of the settlements. You're talking to people in the settlements.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I'm not the great devil. Oh, people, they still figure they want to go back to the old ways. Lots of them. They figure they're training their kids and not training good in schools. And a big kick coming up about that. But then, as I tell them, I say, you remember that the times are changing everywhere, and it's not only here, it's all along the river. And when I go out for you people, I meet the slaves up there, everybody's complaining. Because the kids don't too much white man way.
Mm.
Well, it can't help it. It's got to go that way.
Still, the people who who came into Inuvik come from the settlements.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I'll set this down here, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
They come from the settlements, but you think that the people in Inuvik aren't as much attached to the old ways as the people in the settlements.
Yeah, that's what I think, yeah. Well, like, for instance, like myself now. Oh, I kick them, sure I kick them. I got kids grown up, practically grown up now. And I'm at home. When I was brought up, go around and help my dad and mom. But no matter what it is, wash dishes or scrub floors, mm-hmm. and everything like that. You think my kids would do that? Not unless I drive them to it. And it's all over like that now. They figure that's not our job, that's supposed to be mom and dad's job.
Maybe they have no time because of schoolwork.
Well, they don't have too much schoolwork. An hour after school, they do their homework and that's it. Mm-hmm. But then they can at least sometimes bring in wood or bring in a little water like that. Mm-hmm. You think they do that? No. That's what the whole people is complaining. When I was young, I scrub floors, haul water, cut wood. My dad don't do nothing. He makes a living.
Yeah.
He goes out trapping, hunting. But I don't figure that my dad should cut wood in the evenings. You know, although I was small, I still cut wood for my dad every night and haul water. So when he comes in, well, don't mind, just sit down and take it easy. Right? Now it's absolutely nothing like that. Kids just, all they want to go to show is spend money. That's it. That's where the big complaint is coming on.
Complaint even from people in Inuvik.
That's right, all over. Not only in Inuvik, the whole McKinley Delta. Because I talk slavey just like as good as any one of them, and they tell me about it. Well, I tell them the same thing all the way through. Well, I say, what can we do about it? I say, well, if you don't send your kids to school, well, then you get into trouble right away, too. I say, every kid's supposed to have a little education. That's what the government says, so what can you do about it?
But what can the parents do when the kids get like to the, I'll say the ninth grade, and they want to drop out? What can the parents do then?
By that time, they were about 16, isn't that right? Or maybe 50.
I guess so.
And you can't control them after that. You can't force them.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, right. So I went and I had trouble with Jamie. She quit school on us before she went out. Like,
yeah.
So only the way we could do is we'll send her out to her sister in Winnipeg and get her into school, which we did. But as far as trying to drive her to school here, I contacted the Mount Police. Can't do nothing, Jim, sorry. She's 15 or saying, we got no control over that. And he says, if you do her any harm, he says, you get into trouble. So what could I do? I got no control over her, neither has nobody.
When does this end of control start? From what year?
Well, from the time they go to school until the kids realize that they're 14 or 15, well, they say, well, we don't have to go, we don't want to.
I see, the law is that they must go.
They must go.
Until 14?
Until 14.
Uh-huh. That's the end.
That's it. And then if they want to continue, well, that's up to them. If they want to quit, well, I got no say. I try to talk to them nice and tell them what education means to them, what it will be mean to them, but I can't force it. And if you force a kid, well, he's not interested anyway.
Mm-hmm. So what you mean when you say that you can control the children after 14, you mean that up until then, the law helps you.
That's
up
right.
After 14, the law says
uh-huh.
school, you must
That's
go to school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
After 14, there isn't this law anymore. And so how are you going to, how are you going to force them to go to school?
That's right. I wouldn't force them. And all they do is try and encourage them or talk nice to them.
Mm-hmm. Do the kids know this law?
Oh, they know. Because I got after little Edwin. You know, Edwin, my little old little boy at home.
Uh-huh. Edwin.
Now, last year he was playing hooky. All the time, of which I didn't know about. So I got a report from the school teacher, and he said, Mr. Corey, he says, your boy, you've been missing school all this time. He said, did you know about it? I said, no. So he said, well, he says, this is what he's been doing. So I went to the police.
This is the second time you went to the police?
No, that's for Edwin alone. I told him, told the police, look at this. So I've got a boy at home, and he's only 12 years old. And it's been painful day all last winter, which I didn't know about. I said, the teachers came to me and I said, they told me about it. I said, how about, what are you going to do about it? They said, if you don't make school, well, I said, I guess you might as well take over. And the police told me himself, he said, he was a corporal. I knew the corporal for quite a number of years now. He says, Jimmy says, we can't take that kid. He says, we can't punish him. He's too young. But he says, on the other hand, I'll tell you what to do. He says, you go to the magistrate, and the magistrate will threaten him, put a scare into him. I mean, he wouldn't mean it, but that's the only way to work it. The magistrate will put it. Keep an eye on him. And if he don't do a big school or he misses school, well, he's got the authority to send him out to reform school. So I went up to Mr. Holm. At home, my everything. Okay, Mr. Cole, he says, I'll get in contact with the teachers right here. And he said, the first day he missed school, he says, I'll keep him, and every day, so I'll check him, Edwin. And he says, I'll have a talk with Edwin, too. So he had a talk with Edwin. Since that day, he never missed school.
Yes,
sir. That's right. So he just told him, Edwin, he says, your mom and dad trying hard for you. He said, you don't keep up with your schoolwork. He said, I got the power to send you out or to put you in jail right now. Which one are you going to take? He said, you're going to attend school or you're going to take the jail? And well, he started crying. He said, I'm going to take the school. And he never missed school yet. That's the only way, you see, wouldn't it?
What would that have been? Would that have been last...
last year.
Last spring?
Last
around this time?
Yes, just about this time. And I couldn't make him go to school. I don't want to equip the kid. I don't want to hurt him. We're trying to encourage him. He wouldn't go. So he said, well, Daddy, I don't like Inuvik. He said, I don't like my teacher. That's why I quit school. So I went up again and I told him that I've seen his teacher. I said, I understand that your Edwin's missing school quite a bit around here. Yes, Mr. Quinn. But I said, I'll tell you right now, when I talk for my people, I said, I don't take no backseat from nobody. I just tell them right off the bat, and that's it. I said, you haven't been nice to these kids around here. Not only Edwin. I said, the rest of the class told me about it. So you're not supposed to be that way. You come down here, you get paid good money to teach our kids and not to treat them like little pups just because they're natives. Well, he said, I didn't know I wasn't rough, yes. I said, you was pretty rough with it. I said, I know it. You couldn't say no more. But I said, remember, I'm really going to get after Edwin and you. You won't come back here to New York again. So they send him out. Now he's happy, he got a new teacher, and he said, Dad, it's your nice teacher. I'm trying really hard. So about a week and a half ago, we went up to see their schoolwork. And her teacher told me, Jimmy said, that boy of yours is a A1. Really tried. So I'm really happy to see Edwin really going ahead now. Well, because I say you're nice to them. I say anybody who's nice to another person, anybody would do anything for them. But if anybody gets rough, well, even kids, they don't like that. Especially kids at all. So I'm glad Edwin's going ahead, and I'm glad that you're happy. I'm happy too. Really.
So some teachers are disrespectful.
They are disrespectful.
To the native children.
To the native children. That's why lots of these kids, they just give up, okay?
And when he went back in September, he had a new
teacher altogether.
New teacher altogether.
And he just praised that little woman right now. Got a good teacher, Dad. He's, and it's the only thing his teacher told me, he says, Mr. Corey, Edwin is in too much of a hurry.
Oh.
he likes to get his work done and be free, like, but he has to realize that he has to take his time and keep in his head what he's learning. So I talked to him back again, told him, okay, Daddy, I'll do that. So now that he's fine now. He did never miss school, don't try and miss school. And that's it.
Has he got any idea what he will do after he's finished?
Well, he says he's going to wait for his brother.
That's Freddie?
Freddie. If I see Freddie is going ahead and he starts making good, he says, I think I'll follow my brother. That's all he says. He's a wise little boy. So we don't know, even me, I don't know what Freddie's intending to do. But the last report I heard that he wanted to be an officer in the armed forces. But he realized now that he's got to have at least a year or two in university.
Of university training?
Training, and then he can go ahead.
So he would go join the military?
Yeah, well that's what he had to do. First he figured on being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess now, I mean, he's actually only realized that he's got to
mm-hmm.
spend about another 8 years in school, which he don't like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured, well, maybe 2 years in the university and then come out as an officer, will that be better for him? So actually, he's a very quiet boy, but he don't tell us much, but that's what I figure he got in mind, is to be an officer. So.
The children keep these thoughts, make these plans by themselves.
That's right.
They don't tell me.
No. And you don't tell them what to do either. See, I don't tell my kids what to do. I just let them decide for themselves. As they see education coming, I say, you decide what you want to do, what you want to be, and everything like that. But it's not up to us to tell them, you do this, because maybe they wouldn't like it.
Do they have anybody with whom they can talk about their plans?
Well, actually, no. You take like Freddie. Well, he had figured to start with. Actually, he had in mind to go into the military. And he was a cadet here, you see.
Ah, I didn't know that.
And he liked that. So when he left, when he quit the cadets, he was promoted as a major. And he likes that.
Mm-hmm.
So he had his full training here. He was out there for 3 months in Kingston.
In the summertime?
In the summertime.
Training.
In training. And then he had good record there.
I see.
So what they done, the headquarters out there wrote to the Navy here. And they wanted Freddie out. To join the
enlist.
So they said, get ready to sign these papers, and if he wants to come out, just send him out to us. They wrote to the commanding officer at the Navy. So they brought Freddie down, and they said, Freddie, we got a letter on you here. He said, well, up to you now. He says, you had a good record in last summer, and he said, they want you. But that time he just passed his grade 12, you see. So, well, Freddie said, well, sir, he says, I don't figure joining yet because he says, I figure that I should go another year in school. After I put in another year, and a year in university, then I says, I wouldn't mind. So they wrote back with him and they told him, okay, but we'll keep in contact with you. So,
mm-hmm. And is there anybody in the school who talk about, do that, take that interest in the kids that they took in him in Kingston?
Oh, yes, there was about four or five of them. But they all backed out of it, you see.
Who went to Kingston?
Yeah, with him. It's cadets, you know.
You know who these kids were?
Oh, there was some of them. I wouldn't even recall them right now. But there was, I know this boy that joined the Air Force, Melvin. He went out with Freddie that time in the army. He liked it, so that's why he joined the RCDF now. And there's there's a couple other boys, but they backed right out right away. They didn't like it. But I figure Freddie's, he still got that in mind. Although he don't tell us, but I still figure he got that in mind that he wants to go join the military.
So somebody took personal note of him.
That's right.
Personal interest.
In something.
And it came through here, the Navy, and the commanding officer called him in to discuss his plans.
Mm-hmm.
Do they do that at the school? Talk about the kids'
No, they don't.
Is there anybody
they
else?
Just, you see, they have a yearly record of them in the school. They put out a book for them. And they'd ask different students what you would like to be when you're educated or when you're grown up again. And the students will say, well, I'd like to be this. It'll come out this spring. I'd like to be this, and I'd like to be that. And some of them say, well, I'd like to join the Mounted Police and stuff like that. But then when the time comes, none of them do.
Yeah, yes.
And the only guy that I know joined the Mounted Police is from a guy from Fort Liard. That's about the other side of Fort Simpson.
I know where it is.
Yeah. Well, this naked boy joined the Mounted Police, and he was stationed down here for a while. And then he went out again.
How do people like to have
him? Oh, really nice boy. I mean, he's nice, but when he gets a job to do, well, he's doing it.
He did it anyhow.
He's done it anyway. But he's still, people are really proud of him because he's a native.
They recognize that.
They recognize that right away. But he tell the boys, he said, we're all one people. He says, I don't give nobody. He said, that's the way I was trained. And he said, I don't give nobody no privileges. When I'm on duty, he said, I do my job. So don't figure that I'm going to have pity on you people. He said, just when I'm free, I'm right with you.
Do you have a family?
No. No, it's a single boy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. How did we get on that? We're talking about school,
yeah,
and leaving school,
mm-hmm.
And children plan with their lives. I guess Marilyn is too young to do any planning with her life.
No, and she don't talk about it yet.
Mm-hmm.
No, she don't. Sometimes she's pretty lively little girl, you know, she watches everything pretty close. And sometimes she'd say, well, I want to be a nurse, and sometimes I'd be a nurse's aide, and different things like that, you know. And then she'd say, well, I'd like to be a stewardess on the airplane and travel the world around. You see, that's up to them to see, as they see things come in that way,
mm-hmm.
Well, maybe that'll be up to them. But I always tell her that she's a nice little girl. If you figure on doing any kind of job like that, remember, you've got to have the education. Then I say you can get it. If you quit school before you're finished, you'll never get nowhere. But she's got a good record in the school here. Well, the teacher really...
She likes her teachers?
She likes it. And the teacher likes her because she's... Her teacher told me that when we were up there to look at the record, and she said, Jim, is that little daughter of yours is so intelligent, so kind, so happy. She said, I'd just like to take her back out myself. Yeah. But her schoolwork is nice. Everything is just going fine with her. You know. She really tries.
How about your son? Your brother Alan, who has two sons, in the hospital.
It's not my brother, it's my son, Alan Cooey.
Excuse me. He's your oldest son.
That's right.
I guess these charts mixed up. Yes, your son Alan, who has two sons, Paul and Charlie, in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Are they making any plans for their lives?
Oh, no. They're too young yet.
Oh, are they? I thought they might be as old as...
No, they're just really young. I think Paul is about seven.
Oh.
I mean, Charlie. and Paul is about, what, 8? There's a year between the two of them. They're too young for that.
Yeah, I thought they might be.
And
older.
I check with their teachers because I'm their granddad, you know.
Yes.
And the oldest boy, Paul, he's really a time. Really a time in school. The teacher really appreciate that little boy. But Charlie's kind of a little young yet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But another couple of years, and then I think both of them will do really nice. And, kids like that, I mean, you can't expect them.
No, you know, I just didn't realize
yeah.
how old they were. That's mm-hmm. why I raised them. That's why I brought them up. Well, we talked about the army. I had that to ask you. I've been talking to some other people, and one of the things that I've heard somebody say about life now, that there isn't as much freedom now as there used to be.
Yeah, all right.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with it.
I'm not sure just what they mean.
Well, I know what they mean.
Freedom.
They have the same thing, like in McPherson and McClavin. Now, we'll say Arctic Railroad, all along the river. People in the traffic in my personal, especially I'll mention the traffic because I stayed
yes.
there a long time.
Yes.
And when I first settled down in the traffic, no police, no white man bothered nobody.
Oh.
You just lived the way you wanted. The only thing that we had a little strict about it was the doctor. And of course they have the school in the traffic and they teach the people about sanitary.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then the doctor would step up and say, that's right, people, he says, the teachers are telling you the right things. And one thing, we've got to try and keep everything clean. He said, you keep everything clean, that's good for your health. But he says, as far as you make your living is concerned, he says, wherever you go, he says, you've got the freedom, nobody bother you, no police bother you, he says, you're just free. So I stayed with him. Yeah, sure, I was in school, my wife was in school, we knew how to keep everything clean, which we did. And the spring comes, well, we clean up our yard, and we make sure the house is always clean, our kids' clothes are clean, our clothes are clean. But as far as living in the bush, everything was just free to us,
yes.
fine dandy. And the police never bother us. They come around, they patrol. I work with them, I patrol the Delta with them. And we see people shooting ducks, shooting anything. As long as they eat, they live good. Nobody bothers them. But then after all, the government says, well, if they continue that way, well, there'll be no game left. Well, these games have been going on for, we'll say, a million years now. We're still lost a bit. So today, and then afterwards, the game wardens come in.
Uh-huh.
And all different ways, the Northern Affairs come in. And today, you can't do nothing. You've got to just either stay here or wherever you are. If you're away from the town, well, then nobody bothers you. You're free then.
You're saying that people are still free in the bush?
Still free in the bush. But still, on the other hand, you've got to watch around for the game warden, too, because if he catches it, then you got it.
Even there are regulations.
And that's right. And that's what they mean. There's no freedom at all. If I didn't have a job, and I was staying in here, I can't even go out unless I shoot this straight grass. Nothing else. If I was in the bush, well, I'd shoot anything. I figure it's good for my living, well, it's okay. Providing, I got to still watch out who's around. You see, that's what they mean.
You don't have somebody looking over your shoulder all the time in the bush.
That's right. That's the whole thing. But if you're in town, you got to watch for this and that, and then in the end you're just actually like in jail, I would say. But if you're in the bush over there, that's different.
So you think that these people are making a comparison between the town and life as it used to be before the police gained regulations, when a Klavik was even freer, and the bush, which was still freer.
Still freer.
When would you say these changes begin to come about? When does the
I'll tell you, I wouldn't know just exactly the year, but the time is just when the game wardens and the Northern Affairs came in here.
That would be about 53?
Somewhere around there, yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. But before that, only the police control the whole outfit.
Go ahead.
And the police, they travel, we patrol the Delta like this, first line and all that. Wherever they meet a native, they're welcome. Just like brothers. They don't bother nobody unless it's actually a crime. And then, of course, the police do their job. But outside of that, they really control this people real nice. And everybody likes them, and they like the people, and they get along fine. But since the game wardens and the Northern Affairs come here, well then, everything is changing.
Are you saying that the police used to have a better relationship with the people?
Way better.
In the old days than
that's
they have
right.
now, and the game wardens have now?
Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm not ashamed to say it too.
Maybe there weren't as many people.
More people. Because we had two epidemics down here.
That's right.
One in right after the war. Another one in 1945 that killed off practically half the people. So there was more people them days than we have today.
Then maybe a different type of policeman.
Well, I don't know, but I still figure they're all the same. They all got the same training, and I see up the river, we'll say in Fort Norman there, or in Fort Franklin. Well, in Franklin there's no police.
No detachment.
No detachment. But it's controlled by Fort Norman, it's only 100 miles. And they go in there, and well, people happy, making their living, the police don't bother them.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's what I figure. And if you want to do something in town here, if you want to cut a stick of wood, well, you have to go to Northern Affairs. Or if you want to go hunting someplace, you have to ask the game warden. And he'll tell you where to go and all that. You tell him, well, I want to go here. Well, he says, well, maybe somebody's there. You go here. See, everything is controlled by them right here. That's why the people say they got no freedom.
Does that mean also that since the registered trap lines came in?
That's right.
Freedom has shrunk?
Right. Tight.
And they come in about 1949, 48?
Must be somewhere around
there. I must get that information.
Yeah, I got the book down there anyway. But I'll find out. I've got so many papers myself out there.
That should be easy to find out.
Yeah.
That's written down.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
You see, used to be a lot of people. Oh gosh, the people in the Delta was lots of them. And then some white people, white trappers, they're getting kind of jealous. And there's quite a few white trappers them days, you see. And they said, well, the people hunt all over, you see. And they said, well, this guy come over to my place and hunt around there that night. And there was something that started this registered trap line. Before that, the country was free.
You mean the white men complained?
The white trappers.
They complained.
And that's how they started the registered airline, trap line. It kept up for about 5 years. And I was still the chief, and I was the president of the Tapper Association that time, too, as well. So these, I see these boys, quite a few of them. They come to me and they say, well, Chief, he says, as I told you before, we got no way to make money. We can't, I says, our area is so small that we just clean it off one night and then there's nothing to hunt. We can't, how about all summer and all fall? Where are we going to get stuff? Where's the job? So then I said, well, I said, that's just where the white man put it, but I said, we're going to have a meeting pretty soon. I just said, just wait and see what we can do about it. Then I heard there's quite a few guys stealing. They want to go someplace, they can't get gas. They swipe gas from their neighbors, like oil and lots of other stuff. I heard about three of them got picked up for that. So we had this Tavis meeting. I said, look it. I said, before these white people come in here, I said, there was no complaint whatsoever. I said, we hunt wherever we want. We control our own game regulations. I said, nobody complained, nothing. Now, I said, through these white people, I said, there was registering trap lines. And I said, what about the boys? And I said, every one of the natives, practically, very few of them, I said, maybe about three of them, I said, got fair-sized area. But the rest of you boys, I said, you got very small area, but the white man, they pick up their own area, and it's big. They still make their living good on that. But I said, our boys start stealing, breaking into anything, because they got no place to hunt. I said, let's go back to the old days and throw the country open. So then I said, no, some of us are getting too old now. The boys can go in there and make themselves a few dollars and buy something. And that'll finish off the stealing business. Yeah. Well, they thought it over and they said, well, Chief, I think that's a good idea. It's very good. We'll throw the whole thing open again and let everybody hunt, which they've done. Just the odd one holding there. But they said that whoever wants to hold their area, they can hold it. But there's very few held it. You know, there's still a few of them hold it, like, you know, very few. But the country's open to everybody on the other side, you know. I didn't hear of nobody holding the area on that side, but on this side I heard about two or three of them still holding.
I hear that recently even, they opened some areas.
Yes.
Didn't the Norrises give up their land?
No. That's one thing I don't like about them, that outfit, you know. They sure work everything their own way.
Didn't they give some of it up?
Not that I heard of. Because we're complaining of to Jim Warden that they should throw that area open too, because they hold half the delta here, that's Norris outfit.
That's what I heard. I heard that they don't use it.
They don't use it, and that's what we told them, Game Warden, when we met up with him about January. And he said he was going to look into it very seriously. And they got to give it up or else we'll take it away. That's what they told us anyway. But since then, we haven't had a Traverse meeting yet.
Oh. Maybe the man I heard is talking about January, what you said in January.
Yeah, that's what you mean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're not working their area, just the old woman staying up there, okay?
Right.
And they both got a job here. I mean, he's in business and his brother's working at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see why they should hold all that country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we told Gabe Morton, and he said he's going to look into it.
Yeah.
But I was in Portsmouth in February, and they're really talking strong about the game department. And they figure that anybody holding steady jobs shouldn't trap at all. But I mean, that's a hard thing to settle down, you see. Because I told them, well, look at this. I agree with you. Sure, I agree with you.
In principle.
Yeah. But I said, how about my, I said, I got maybe two boys now. I says, maybe they want to go back trapping. I said, they got a little education, but I said, maybe they want to make a living in trapping, like my oldest boy
mm-hmm.
got. And he says, I told him, I says, who's going to teach them?
Yeah.
I said, I got to teach them. I said, if they want to go trapping, well, I says, it's up to me to teach them kids. And yet, I said, on the other hand, they say, you're trying to hold me back from my trapping? I said, I don't go out there to make money. I said, I just go out there to keep my license. And one of these days, maybe them two kids are just ready to trap, and they figure, well, then they're going to go trapping. But I said, I can't go out there to teach them. I said, what the heck are you going to do? So I said, I'd rather that the guys that work around here, I really agree with you in one way, but on the other hand, I said, we have to.
Some kind of compromise will
happen. Yeah, we have to work it some other way, but you just can't cut the old timers off. So you can't do that.
Supposing somebody who has had a job in Inuvik for maybe 5, 10 years, decides he wants to go to the bush, or his son wants to go to the bush. Is there a place for him? Can he really go out there tomorrow or next fall and get started trapping again?
Well, that's just what I told you. The country is free right now.
It is.
It is free right now.
It's open for anybody.
Anybody at all.
If he's a native, I mean.
He's a native, yeah. He can go anywhere he wants. All you got to do is he's old enough, go up and get his hunting license, and he can take off. Go anywhere he wants.
But there's nothing forcing a man to stay here if he wants to go out in the country.
Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. I've been working for a long time now, and I figure, well, I'm fed up with it, and I'm going to go. Well, I got my license anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So all I have to tell him, well, I'm quitting the job and I'm going traveling. Well, they wouldn't say nothing. Well, it's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ask me where you're going, and I told him, well, I'll tell you where I've been after I finish trapping. Right now, I haven't decided yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the country is free, you see.
Mm-hmm.
The Delta is free, and I can go anywhere I want.
With the exception of these few closed areas.
That's right. The only thing we've got to watch for that, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the mountains, when it comes to hunting caribou, that's all open.
Oh, that's real open. Go anywhere you want. It's all open. And then there's another, and there's no limit on caribou, but providing. But the people, they watch for all that, you see. They don't kill no more than they have to.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And that's their old system like that, all from years back. Just kill enough for themselves and what they're going to need. And that's it.
Is it true that there is a limit on moose?
Well, I think the game warden said this last meeting we had that there was a limit on cows. Mm-hmm. But then another guy says, okay, he says, we'll save all the cows, but if we kill off the bulls, he said, where are we going to get the moose from?
Sure.
So there you are. Now he's stuck again. So, well, he said, as long as people don't kill too many moose, that'll be fine.
Okay.
They say, we'll say about 3 or 4 moose to the family per year. See, if you look after that meat good, and plus little other game that you eat, so that should do a family good. But he said, I don't, it won't be a limit, but I mean, keep this about 3 or 4 moose to the family, and then
mm-hmm.
that'll be okay.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think that's, but they're trying to protect cows, I don't know why, but they say you can kill the bulls. Well, that don't look sense to me
can't
at all.
Can't kill too many of those, either.
No, because we kill off the bulls, well, there's no moose.
Now, how about when it comes to setting a fishing net around here? Is that completely unrestricted? In the summertime, I mean. Can I set a fish, not me, but say I was a native.
Yeah.
Can I set a fishing net wherever?
Anywhere at all. The river is open, lakes are open. Anywhere anybody figures lots of fish, he's got the freedom right there.
Do I need a general hunting license?
No. Well, I think that's a white man.
I don't think, I mean, listen, wait for the nomination.
I'll say a white man now. If a newcomer come in here, say like the Navy boys now.
Uh-huh.
Well, if they want to set a fish net, they have to report to the game warden.
Uh-huh.
They have to get a license for that. But as far as the native's concerned, well, everything's free for that.
That's what I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fishing is regulations, nothing.
The native's welfare.
Fish anywhere they want, no matter where.
Is there any rule among the people themselves when it comes to setting a fish net? When I was up the Liard with the Kaska Indians,
mm-hmm.
they had certain rules about setting a fishnet too near another guy's fishnet. This wasn't police.
Yeah.
It was the Indians themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I know, I've been fishing with my native people down there, and there's no such thing as that. We have what we call this on the river. If you go around a point, if you go around the point like that, they have the water always run back. We call them eddies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the fish would be coming upstream like this, and they get into one of these eddies, which help them to go upstream,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4. Just in the Clavic alone, right on that point, there's 5 eddies there. And at that time when I was in the Clavic, the population in the Clavic was over 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them nets was just packed with, the eddies was just packed with nets.
More than one family in the same eddy.
About 10 of them.
In the same eddy.
Same eddy. Nobody complained. If you get fish, well, it's fine. But there's lots of fish, though. Everybody get enough, like, for themselves and for their dogs. But nobody complained. If somebody's come in and set a net, another guy come a little too close, well, then the guy will tell him, look, you came a little too close, maybe our nets might get tangled up in the wind or something.
Mm-hmm.
The guy just said, why don't you move down a little bit more?
Mm-hmm.
That's all they said.
Mm-hmm.
They never complain about that. Never heard any, you know.
I hear that people set nets out here in the summertime.
Yeah, well, but there's no eddy here, though.
No.
No, they just send it downstream, like, you know. And within a few days, their nets get all full of twigs and dirty, and then they have to feed them. They get the odd fish, but not too many. That's why lots of them, they get these speed boats, and they go down the river.
Oh.
Where they can find little eddies, like, you know, they set their nets, maybe 4 or 5 nets in one little eddy, but nobody complained. They all get little fish.
So those speedboats aren't just for recreation.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
People use them for work.
We use them for work, hunting and everything. They're not just for pleasure. They make their living out of it. Some of them go down, say, about 10, 15 miles. After work, they go down and visit their nets, and you get the odd fish.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of these speedboats. The native owned speedboats are not for pleasure, they're for their living.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that, I didn't hear, but the way in which people talked, I thought that the speedboats were a luxury.
No. This is part of their living.
Are they replacing the canoes?
They are. There's hardly any canoes left. One time I told you that the boys up the river and the guys in the Clavic, they're building scows now, little scows, because they're cheaper and they're better. And the canoes are too high a price to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't last half as long.
Mm-hmm.
So hardly any canoes left. They only hunting canoes, that's like 16 footers or 12 footers, the small ones.
Yeah.
Well, they use that for hunting rats in the spring. But the big canoes, like 20 foot or 24 big canoes, they're all out of date now. Nobody bothers.
Even for trappers?
Yeah.
Even for people who are going away?
Mm-hmm. They don't want it.
But the people who go away must load up in the fall. They must have big outfits.
Well, not too many now. I mean, they're all scattered all over the Delta, and they don't take too much. But they'd rather have these scows, because they hold more, and they're cheaper, and they're better. But the canoes don't, they don't have whole half the stuff that these boys that make their own scows, you know.
There are some people in Inuvik who own scows?
I think there's one or two Eskimos. But there's not too many Indian people here, you see. There
no.
Uh-huh. But in the Klavik, there's lots of them in the scows. Lots of them.
I guess
and my person too.
I'll be seeing those come over here in the...
oh yeah, they'll be here, some of them, this spring, after ratting, you know, after the 15th of June, that's when the ratting is over. And then most of them come over here and just for a visit or come here to buy something like that. But they all got good little scows, really nice. But this canoe business, that's getting out of date altogether.
Even for people who set, like old women who might set a net or two out in front?
Well, they have there's a few canoes. Like I said, this 16-foot canoes.
They would still use them.
They're still using them. I don't think you can replace them because they're very handy for the Delta, these little canoes, like, you know.
Does welfare give canoes to a woman, a widow, here in Inuvik, to help her get food? Do you ever hear of that?
I heard of it in the Klavik.
I heard of it in the East, too.
Yeah, they give them there. Well, the last Indian agent was here. I got a stepmother over there, and I think they gave her a canoe. Just to... set a fish net, or she can hunt a little bit in the spring herself. So I think they gave her a canoe.
Elizabeth
Coy.
Oh.
That's my stepmother.
She was Vitriqua.
That's right, one time.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's few of them in the person there. They got canoes from the department. But otherwise, the guys will make their own scouts.
Oh, over there?
Yeah, in the first.